I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome to this week's episode of Podcasten Samtal, which today will be conducted in English because of the international relevance of the subject. And the subject this week is the war in Ukraine. I had the honor to record this podcast with Kenneth Gregg, who is currently fighting against Russia in Ukraine. He's originally from Finland, just like me, but he moved to Ukraine in 2017. And when the Russians attacked, he decided to stay and fight. For you who listen to this for the first time, I welcome you to Podcast and Samtal. Probably and hopefully we will have more of these interviews or conversations conducted in English in the future. Sit back and relax and enjoy this conversation. Welcome here to Podcast and Samtal, Kenneth.
Thank you very much.
Is this the first time you participate in a podcast?
Yes, actually it is.
You've been in Finnish and Swedish media, and you've drawn some attention on Facebook because almost every day you make updates on Facebook on the war. And you've gathered a couple of followers on Facebook.
Yeah, actually, I made it only for myself in the beginning because this war, which is going on now, it's terrible. It's a total attack against civilian targets. Very little to do to try to hit out the Ukrainian army. It's more to destroy war crimes in every village where they have been. So I really wanted to, after the war, to go through what actually had happened day for day. So that was my main thinking about to make the updates and how the war went from day to day. But suddenly it actually people liked what I was reading, and it was full of facts. So I thought, okay, if people want to read it, let them read it.
Mm. And when you moved to Ukraine in 2017, the annexation of Crimea had been going on for a couple of years. Did you ever had the thought that one day maybe Russia will attack Ukraine?
No, absolutely not. During 2017, I visited all the military exhibitions, what was here, and I saw already then what kind of army the Ukrainians had. So I told always to people that before the war that, okay, the Russians are only trying to show their muscles, but they will not attack. But I was wrong.
Do you have any background in military from before the war in Ukraine?
Only my duty service in Finnish Army that every man need to go through, nothing else.
So how many years ago did you do that training?
Oh, that was 1983. I came out from the military, but it has been some repetition maneuvers.
And when did you make the decision to stay and fight, and how what made you do it? Because it's kind of like a big thing to fight for a country that you didn't grow up there, and it's you live there. What made you take the decision to actually stay and fight and put your life at risk?
Actually, since 2017 I came here. The people, the Ukrainian people, has showed their hospitality. They helped me with all bureaucratic things. Very good friends. We went into a social network, especially when we founded our hockey club. So I couldn't leave all my friends and all my businesses here. That it was no option to go away.
And how did you have any contact with the army before the war, or did you join the army when the Russians attacked?
No, I had absolutely no. I knew some veterans actually is working in our company who has been 2014, 2015, 2016 on the Donbas front. So, actually, when this war started or the invasion started, I was in Frankfurt. And I waked up in the morning and got the news. I called my friend, the veteran, and he was already ready for duty. They were mobilizing. But you need to understand that the army here in Ukraine, you have the regular army, and then you have the local defendants, or it's more like local paramilitary. Part of these are belongs to the regular army, but then you also have another part that it's absolutely territorial. So I went into the territorial, which was the battalion 130 in Kiev. Just went there. I got in. They asked what I want to do. I say I'm here for a volunteer. And after an interview, then they said, okay, they need instructors because it's coming hundreds of people every day. They want to join, but many of them can't even handle a gun. So I needed to make a test, or actually to keep a 1 hour of instruction with a group, like just to go and do it. And they observed what I did, and after they say, okay, you are hired. So on this way it started.
And this was in February when they attacked?
Yeah, this was actually the February the 29th.
And you were training recruits in Kiev?
Yes, actually Kiev was under bombs, and we trained in a cellar. We started to train, and we also had an attack on the base. That was actually the second day of the war, where so-called saboteurs came in a big car, jumped out and started to shoot straight into the base. So it was one dead before the defenders could push them away. So it was actually the first 2 weeks was very critical. especially for Kiev, because the Kiev was full of saboteur groups.
Who infiltrated Kiev from, they were already there?
They were already there. Actually, the figures that I got from my commander were that there were between 1,000 and 1,200 Wagner soldiers. And that is actually the elite soldiers.
Wow. But, Putin's private army, they call it.
Yes. And actually, it was the veterans who just came to the block posts or to take the fights. They got their AK-47s and just started to fight them. So actually they killed every one of them. And these Putin men, they actually wanted to take over the central strategic places and in that way try to conquer Kiev.
Mm. But they didn't expect the kind of fight that the Ukrainians would put up with them, I guess.
Also Ukrainians didn't expect it in the beginning, but it is actually thanks to the veterans that we could take down this first attempt. And first after that, they came over the border in Chernobyl and from the Belarusian side with the big columns.
So I've heard that whenever a soldier is get their baptism of fire, the first bombardment or the first time someone shoots at them, they never know how they're going to react.
Yeah.
How was your reaction?
I've been shooting as a hobby with the AK-47s. So how to say, when you hear the shootings, if you have handled this AK-47s, you really know what is happening. So it was not, you get the adrenaline in the blood, but nothing else. You are calm. You need to concentrate on how to handle your automatic and just be 0.1 second quicker than the enemy. Mm. That's what it's about.
How many soldiers have you shot so far?
Oh, I really don't know. It's we haven't been in so many fights on the zero front lines. It's only our task is more to recognize, give coordinates, and send it to our artillery. So it's like we are more not to be seen. So we need to shoot as little as possible. So only if it's really necessary.
Mm. But you have been in close encounters with the Russians?
Yeah, a couple of times, yes.
Mm. And how do the human mind react to actually shooting another person?
this is a really, really good question, because during that moment, you really don't think it. It's you or them. But afterward, it's coming that, especially if you are religious or something, where you say you should not kill. So actually, I asked a priest in Finland, how does, for instance, the church has their thoughts about this Bible law that you should not kill. And I got a really strange answer. The answer was that, yeah, if you stand private against one, you should not do it. But if the state tells you to do it, you are allowed to do it. Mm. So here is a really big moralic question.
Mm. Because it's, I guess, much easier to defend a country than attacking a country. I mean, for the Russians, it must be so much harder for them to justify shooting Ukrainian soldiers and civilians and destroying infrastructure, schools, hospitals, and so on.
Yes, you really, and especially when they execute the civilians, how they are behaving in the villages where they were. But you need to look at the soldiers in the Russian army. Most of them are from very, very poor regions of Russia. No education. They do what they are told to do. They have been raised like that. It's not human what they are doing. Absolutely not.
How is it even possible to foster people like that? How is it even possible to bring it out from people? I can't imagine what they have to go through in order to create those soldiers.
Yeah, it's. But every people is born with a brain, so I mean, you should use it. You should know what is wrong and what is right. And all these things now is okay. They are living in a very big propaganda there. They are promised that they can rob and rape and do whatever they like here, that in Ukraine is only Nazis and they're fighting for the good things.
So they tell the soldiers that if you go to Ukraine, you can take their property and you can rape their women.
Yes. It's if you look what has happened in the areas which has been liberated, it's the same structure of doings in every village. And if they don't get what they want, they just destroy the house. They burn it.
I can't even imagine that this is happening just a couple of kilometers from here.
Yeah, and you should see when we came into Bucha, and we saw actually what has happened there with people with handcuffed hands and shot in the neck, a 15-year-old girl in her house, raped and cut up from the throat all the way down to the stomach and left like that on the bed. So it's
what the, like I
and you know these videos which actually shows all these things media is prepared to show it. No media was prepared to show the videos which my friend in Chernigil had on when it was bombing there, when old people laying on the streets shouting without legs, without head, without hands. And that is the real face of this war. But nobody shows these things. Everybody, all the pictures, everything what the media is showing is, it's looks like it's not so bad. But this is the truth what we see when we come to the places.
So you've seen more in your life, you've seen more now the last couple of months than you've seen in your life before.
10 times. 10 times more. And this is actually, now I'll try to not to think about it, but I know after this war, when all these sights and all these things start to come up in the head, we really, it's not only me, we are thousands of soldiers who need therapy after this. This is incredible what is going on.
I've been reading the newspapers, but it's really hard to get a head around all the happenings because it's so much information. The amount of information is so much, and there's conflicting information, and it's so hard to get the full picture. All the horrible things that you're telling about now, it's some kind of barrier between me and those things when I read the newspapers. Like I read like I can read something like 200 people have been executed, civilians have been executed in this and this region. But it's so hard to just get my head around how terrible it is, because it's so hard to just imagine.
Yeah. You know, we thought we are dreaming when we saw all these things, really. And also when we see, when we take out Russian tanks, and you will see the people there, you know, they are like fried in half a minute. If you take on them, they are, the meat from the bones is coming away. They are really like in a... Yeah, they're really like barbecued.
This is like, I've been trying to understand the war, but it's so hard to gather information, because everyone have their own theories and everybody says different things, and here in Sweden people are on, they only talk about NATO all the time, and it seems like the focus, it's so hard for people to collectively wrap their head around what's happening. And I've seen really scary things. I asked you on Facebook Messenger about one headline, because when I did research on you, I saw that some sources have been questioning that if you're actually are in Ukraine, and that they spread doubt about you. And I've seen that with another Swedish soldier, Jesper Söder, who traveled to Ukraine to fight. And I saw that people were spreading rumors that he wasn't there, that he was lying. And it feels like, I don't know if it's, is it part of the propaganda that people are spreading these rumors? Because there's been rumors spread about you that you're not actually there.
Yeah. But I'm actually on the blacklist of the Russians. So and also every day is trolls trying to get in, like my Facebook friends. And I actually let a couple of trolls get in there because they are so stupid. Actually to a little bit to take out them. Yeah, this what is the biggest problem, what I see it, is that the media or the newspapers or the reportage are not, the journalists are not allowed by their media houses to go to the front line. They are only allowed to come there when everything is cleaned up. And when you take away the bodies, how we find them, it's not so scary. When you just, oh, here, if I take a journalist and tell, oh, here was a 15-year-old girl laying like that, he can't imagine it because he didn't see it.
Oh, is it because they want to save the journalists from the trauma of seeing death and decay?
Yes, and probably also of the security. I mean, but if you choose to be a war correspondent, then you know that you take risks. But somehow the newspapers' bosses don't allow the journalists to go. Actually, I invited the Finnish Yle and the Swedish STV. STV is now coming actually tomorrow together with me to Kharkiv and out to the front line. So this is the first, actually the first journalist that is coming from Scandinavia into the front line. Then 3 weeks after everything was cleared in Kiev area, then you had journalists everywhere running and wanted to find a story or something. But that is like to come, you're too late.
Because if one Google your name... The thing you'll find is that there's an article saying that you're a former criminal, and there is information about your past, not that you're actually fighting in the war, educating people. There is, now I can see the last couple of days it's been changing. But for, I think it actually depends on if I'm in Sweden or if I'm in Finland and I Google your name, I get different results.
Yeah. Yeah, this is, but this war or this doesn't handle. It's not about me. It's about the Ukrainians. It's about the war. It's not me. I'm not the star of this show. I'm just one of 500,000.
Mm. So it's because what I can see is what I suspect and what I'm trying to find out is it part of the Russian propaganda to point you out as a criminal in order to take down the things that you're writing on Facebook? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Part of it, but the second part is, of course, the media. They want to have something to write about. First to put you on a pedestal, and then to take you down from there.
You know, to make the decision to stay in a country that are being attacked by one of the largest superpowers in the world. But we thought that they were one of the largest superpowers, but they have, it doesn't seem to be. I think it makes a war hero. And it kind of makes me a little bit sad when I see that people, that the media isn't, that they're trying to, and I've seen it before, you know, I've seen it on Jesper Söder when he went down there and people were flaming him on Facebook and Twitter and saying that he was lying and that he's a deserter and, you know, things like that. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Is it envy or is it propaganda? It's hard for me to understand these things. It's the first time I see them ever. I've never seen this before.
Yeah, this is. I think it's a phenomenon in the modern world, and you know all these war games you have on video games. It takes away the real. It makes the war more like a glory, but the war is not a glory. The war is a question about life and death. You can't restart a battle like you can do in a video game. Hmm. And I think people they have too little to do.
Hmm.
Just find out what it's really about. Look, see the real face of this war, and you really will understand.
So what is it that the Swedish and Finnish media misses when it comes to reporting this war?
No, it's lack of experience. It's lack of what we have in the Nordic countries. This work security. Are you in a building area? What do you need today? If you are in construction, you need 8, 9, 10 different cards, security cards,
education,
fire cards, and
helmet
everything.
And glasses, and
yeah, you are more like a Christmas tree than a construction worker, and this has gone in the society probably. When I was a kid, we were climbing trees. Today, in our cities, they take away 2 meter up, so nobody had possibility to climb the trees. And kindergarten almost need to go out only with helmet. I mean, it's gone too far.
Hmm. Yeah, it's a different world, and not a lot of people, at least in my surroundings. I come from Åland Islands, and we don't even have military servers, and it's demilitarized in times of peace and neutralized in times of war. And everyone always around me been very proud about the fact that, oh, it's the island of peace. And now when the war is just a couple of hours boat away and just like an hour flight away, and Åland is a very strategic point for the Baltic Sea, it's people are getting really scared. And for me, I remember the shock, the extreme shock when I realized, like, oh my fucking God, the Russians actually invaded Ukraine. I couldn't believe it was true, because it's so close. It's so, like, Russia is Finland's closest country. Like, it's our neighbor.
Yeah, 1,300 kilometer border, yes.
Yeah, and this fucking insane guy, Vladimir Putin, is just going bananas, just playing with people's lives like it's like a game of chess.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think is wrong with Vladimir Putin?
Actually, I met Vladimir Putin when we had business in St. Petersburg, 1993. Especially then, the family friend for us was Anatoly Sobchak and his family. And Putin was his right hand during his mayor time in St. Petersburg. And I told already then that this guy is schizophrenic. 1993.
Mm. And this was before he became the president in 99, right?
Right. Yes, 99. So it, and this was 1993. So he was a scary man already then. And what he actually has done now is during the Soviet Union, the general secretary, he couldn't decide everything by himself. He needed to have the Politburo with him. But Putin has nobody who can stop him. He is totally a dictator. And the West countries didn't see this. But this is a process that has gone on since 2010.
Mm.
So it's...
How could you tell that there was something wrong with him?
His behavior and his looks and how he was speaking. It struck me. After 10 minutes discussing with him, I really told Anatoly Sobchak that, hey, listen, this guy is dangerous. But he didn't listen.
How long did you spend time with him?
We were working together there something about 2 months.
So you met him several times?
Yes. 3 times a week during 2 months.
So do you think he would remember you if he met you today?
I don't know. After he became president, I couldn't get a visa for Russia for 13 years.
Oh, did you get into some kind of conflict with him or the company?
But during that time, you know, everything was in Russia then was corruption.
Mm.
And we knew something about him that he probably during that time didn't want to come out.
Did you personally see anything that you could trace to corruption or like crime connected to Putin, what he did back then?
not during that time. No, not during that time.
He was only into politics and...
He's in... When you are in politics, you are also in business there. So of course, he had part of the businesses in St. Petersburg. That is for sure.
Mm. So what do you think, he's mentally ill?
Yes, he is.
What he would is. You say that happened in his head? I know that you're not a doctor, but you know, I have to ask. Like,
this probably has to do with the collapse of Soviet Union, like many experts referring to. It was probably a very big trauma for him. He was in a very good position in Dresden, and suddenly all that ended.
He managed to do quite well, though.
Yeah, but the first years after was not so happy for him. When he became the right hand of Anatoly Sobchak, then his star started to rise.
Hmm. How many people do you think he killed in order to get the presidency?
This is now only what my thoughts. I don't have any facts to put on it, but at least he killed Sobchak.
Mm.
That is for sure. And also the opponents jumping out of the windows from the seventh floor or falling through a hole. There are a dozen of them at least.
Mm. Do you think he did it personally, or do you think he had someone doing it?
No, he's too scared to do anything personally. He doesn't do the dirty work.
Do you think of course he's a psychopath. He must be a psychopath.
Yeah.
It's not possible. I don't think it's possible to even become the highest leader of Russia if you're not a psychopath. Like if you look back through the years.
Yeah. It's incredible how he actually could build up his power like this. So also he has had the patience to stay low when he needed to be the prime minister between his presidencies. So they had, but he always been good to talk, to give a, as we see now today, the oligarchs, they are not real oligarchs. They are only oligarchs because Putin gave them the permission to become it. And he also can take it away from them very quickly.
Mm. Yeah, some oligarchs have been dying under very mystical... like they've been just... They found several oligarchs around the world just suiciding and killing their families and suiciding.
Yeah.
Something weird is going on around him because he must, like if he would be well informed, he would know that his army wasn't in good shape to take down Ukraine so fast. Something, yeah. He must have been uninformed or misinformed.
Nobody wants to give him the bad news, so everybody is putting up, telling him what they think he likes to hear.
So, but there must be a point where he realized that something is wrong.
Yeah, but if you are mentally ill, when he understands it, it's wrong, then he becomes more harder. Okay, we need to put more violence in it, kill more of the civilian, bomb everything out, bomb all life out there. And you see how they did in Mariupol. It's nothing left of over 500,000 citizens, 500,000 inhabitants town anymore. Nothing.
Why don't we see pictures of this in the media?
Exactly. And again, we are coming to it's probably too scary to show the public.
It's so... Because normally, like I remember like back in 2015-16 when ISIS were in Syria... there were always pictures of stuff happening there, and sometimes I even saw some pictures of beheadings showing up links in social media, and I haven't seen, like I haven't, it's like I'm protected by Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and the newspapers from this.
Yeah,
it's almost like they doesn't let it go past the filters.
Yeah,
I guess exactly. I could find it if I would go and look for pictures of the war crimes. I would probably find it, but I haven't done it because I don't think I want to see it. But maybe I should take a look.
Yeah, because you see the real face of it, what it's really about. It's the clean truth.
Hmm. How safe is it for a journalist to go there now? Do they still have the orders to shoot people in press vests?
The Russians are shooting everything what is moving. So this press vest, they don't respect it. Absolutely not.
Do they shoot at the Red Cross?
Yes, they do. They do. And And I really don't know why, but if they have got orders or permission that they can shoot everything, I mean, they're shooting people, civilists, who's coming with the white flag, with children. I don't care, they just shoot. That's why these evacuations has been very not been able to make it.
This is, it's so like, why he must have calculated, the Russians must have calculated somehow that no one else would go into the war.
Yeah.
The war could have been ended by now if NATO would have gone in and just, you know, it doesn't seem like they have access to their nuclear weapons because they haven't fired them, right?
Yeah, right. Actually, these Russian nuclear weapons, really, in what conditions are they? That would be very interesting to know, because the whole army is a scrap army. They have tires on these Grad systems, which is actually made in the Soviet time, more than 30 years old tires on heavy artilleries. They don't take long time to break down. And we have seen also very much of the equipment that they actually stopped of two things. One is because they don't have petrol, and the second one is that the tires are flat.
Why do they, like, if you're traveling somewhere and you have a vehicle, you calculate the mileage, how far are you traveling, and then you calculate how much is the fuel spend, and then you bring a sufficient amount of fuel with you. How is it even possible for grown men to not calculate how much fuel they need when they're invading a country?
Yeah, exactly. But you know, in that army, the best thing for people in the Russian army is to stay on a low profile, don't do anything, only to do when you get an order. So probably nobody has responsibility for it.
And how much of the Russian equipment is it possible for the Ukrainian army to seize and take and use against them?
At least the tanks. Ukraine has more tanks now than what they had in the beginning of the war.
That's quite funny. They just hunt the Russians out of the tanks and take them?
Yeah, or when they are stuck in the mud. Because what for idiot is starting an invasion when the spring is coming? When you can't go with heavy vehicles outside the roads.
Yeah, Russians really should learn from the history and fight in the winter.
Yeah, and also the reason why we had this 60 kilometer long column in outside when they tried to come to Kiev, that is actually on the Belarusian side, the rail workers made sabotage on the railway. So actually they couldn't wait for to get the railways to work. So they just jumped into the cars and started to drive. And suddenly you had a 60 kilometer line of vehicles.
Cannon meat. Because it's like, I'm not a military man, and I have no formal training, and I have no uninformal training. But I know that it's not a smart idea to put 60 kilometers of vehicles and men in a line, because it's very easy to just bomb them.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess you did.
That happened, yes.
What about the Russian military command? They don't seem very strategic.
No, but... When will they have time to make up a strategy? When they have a pressure all the time that they need to conquer the country? And if you don't succeed with the first attack, then you need to make 10 new attacks. But everybody knows that every time you attack, you lose something. You get weaker, weaker and weaker. So it's...
How long can this war, how long can Russian, Russia send in men and...
Okay, if they don't declare official war, I think this war, actually, the beginning of the end of this war is 15th of May.
Why?
First, that they wanted to have the 9th of May. They wanted to have these big parades and have some victory. Now they have attacked all the time. They don't come even 1 kilometer. They don't come through the Ukrainian lines. They're using their equipment, and Ukraine is getting more and more and more into the front of heavy weapons. So it is estimated that around 10th, 12th, everything is ready for the big Ukrainian counter-offensive. And when that one starts, it's they're going to make of these occupied areas, and it's going to make like a Emmental cheese of it. It's going to be full of holes. And also in Melitopol, we already have very big partisans or guerrilla war, which is destroying and taking the Russians in the back towards between Melitopol and Kherson. And that day, Ukraine take Kherson back with the new American artillery, which has arrived. Actually, we can shoot this link between the Krim and the Ukrainian mainland, actually destroy the road there, which makes that the Russians can't go back, or they can't send in more through the Crimea. So that is the end of that war. They don't come through in Donbas. They tried, but can't come through the lines. And in Kharkiv, they are losing village by village.
If Putin gets desperate, what are you afraid that he can do?
Now everybody's talking about that he will put the nuclear power or the nuclear bomb, but that will not happen. If he do that, that is the red tape for NATO, 100%. The Poland will not accept it. Romania will not accept it to have a radioactive dust coming over the borders. Then is the Third World War, and Russia is over in 2 nights.
Russia have atomic submarines that has nuclear weapons, and they can attack Washington, D.C. They can attack New York. They can, like, if someone fires a nuclear warhead into the air against Russia, Russia can, you know, it'll be over. So many people will die. So many, like, if people start shooting nuclear weapons at each other, it will be over, won't it? Everything. I mean,
in theory, yes, in theory. Exactly like the theory was that Ukraine will only last 3-4 days. But theory is one thing, and practice is another thing. And if we look onto the Russians' army now, what difference would they have on the nuclear department that they have on the other ones? Money which has been put in there has disappeared into private pockets, and it's left with old technology. And I'm rather sure that the US knows exactly where these submarines are.
But why haven't the US, like US have been for years getting involved in other people's wars? Why aren't they there now?
Very good question. I think they also have overestimated the capacity of the Russian army. and they are still probably first started to understand that that there is only one superpower army association, and that is NATO. NATO can take out this in I would say in 12 hours if they would like to do.
Yeah, they wouldn't have wouldn't even have to put in infantry.
No, they don't. Just close the airspace over Ukraine, and there it is.
Mm.
Which means, of course, that they then take down the missiles which are coming.
Mm. And that is one of the things that I've been thinking about: anti-aircraft and anti-missile. Why isn't it more of it? Because there's so many sophisticated systems in the world, like Israel's Iron Dome, and the US has a lot of anti-missile systems. Why haven't they been putting out more of those? I mean, in theory, it would be possible to almost take down every Russian missile which is coming over the border.
Yes, if you consider that the Russians have sent missiles, 2,245. That is 31 missiles every day, which they have sent it. And so it means if you have the same amount of Stingers and all these things, but the problem is that there is not they are not ready produced these things out in the world. You have a special amount of them, and that's it. And when the storage of it or you used it, then they start to produce more. So it's the to produce it which is now the bottom problem.
Okay, so it's kind of, you have the defense there, but whenever you use the material, you have to just produce more, and that's the problem, because you don't have compatible you don't have the ammo. You have the yeah. Okay, I see.
You have the system, but not the ammo, exactly.
And is the missile defense system that Ukraine use, is that internally produced?
No, it's totally English, American, and Israeli.
Mm. Do you think that NATO will get involved?
I think they are already involved by supporting the weapons. As it looks like now, we in Ukraine, if we have these weapons, we actually managed to take the Russians down or to push them out. So, I wouldn't say no thanks if NATO come for to help, but it's not up to NATO decide.
How is it possible that Vladimir Putin haven't been assassinated?
Probably there are. Let's see what happens the 9th. But as I told before here, he's made his power completely clear that everybody on the security or FSB, they are depending on him. The oligarchs are depending on him. And those who want to take over after him are depending on him. So there is actually nobody who has the interest of to take him off.
How big is the chance that Russia will get someone that are better than Vladimir Putin after he dies?
Very good question. What's need to happen before Russia will be even democratic? You need to start the process from inside. But if you have if 83% of the population are zombies, who will have the possibility to start this process?
Yeah, it would take several generations to foster a democratic thinking people.
Yeah. Russia always have had look up to a strong leader. it doesn't matter, is he crazy or is he is good, but he needs to be strong. And this will continue.
So you think the war will, the offensive, right?
Yeah.
Do you think that'll start in the middle of May?
Yes, it will. It will.
And then will the Ukrainian army go into Russia?
Probably not. They probably will stop by the 1991 years borders. So it will not be an attack war from the Ukrainian side. No, it will not.
You and I share the common history of Finland, because we are both citizens of Finland, and we are very proud of the war, because Finland really did good in the war between Russia. But Finland made a big mistake when trying to invade Russia, actually.
Yeah.
Maybe Ukrainians will learn from that.
Let's hope so. Let's hope so.
Because that was very provocative of Mannerheim to try to seize Russian land.
Yes, yes. It was his mistake.
But I guess, like, if you fight the Russians with the efficiency that they did, it felt kind of maybe this could be easy.
Yes.
But I think actually that the Ukrainians have shown that they have, you know, excelled Finland's history of fighting Russians.
Yeah.
Because the bravery that these men have shown is unbelievable.
Yeah, but you know, this bravery, it's not only started with this war. It was also 2014 on the Maidan, when people observed that, okay, Yanukovych is now taking this country back from freedom into Russian hands. So they actually started this. They don't accept it, and this bravery is actually starting from the Maidan revolution.
And now every day the Ukrainian army and all the people in Ukraine that fights gets more and more experience.
Yes.
And this experience is possible to be duplicated into new recruits. So every day, and you tell me that the Ukrainian army gets stronger because people are sending weapons and equipment, and also they take tanks from the Russians, which is hilarious. Is it possible for the Ukrainians to, after this war, become a nation that is stronger than it was before?
Yes, I think what will happen here, because the unity now is very strong. And at the same time, after this war, the people who stand it up for this country, the normal Ukrainian, he will not allow these oligarch systems in this country anymore. And also these corruptions. The first people to run out was the most corrupted. So they actually are abroad already. And people is talking that they're gonna look all the time of the new clerks on the new government, and also these oligarchs systems. And I don't think any politician after this war will stand up for any oligarchs. They need to stand up for the normal people, for everything what they have done here. I mean, you have in my group also, which I recruited, you have a high IT level directors. You have a florist, we have a mechanics, we have chefs, we have construction workers, and everybody is united. Nobody is higher than the other one. Everybody is supporting each other.
Do you think that things would have been different if Ukraine would have been a NATO country?
Yes, this war wouldn't have happened then.
Do you think that, do you think when this is over that Ukraine will be a part of NATO?
I don't think so. the peace probably will be that the security guarantees need to involve also China. And I don't think Ukraine will join NATO in 40, 50 years.
Because they don't want to fuck up their relations with China.
And I mean that the biggest army in the world is actually the China's. And if you need to involve China in this conflict to get it to calm down. So it would be a bad idea for Ukraine to apply for NATO. And I also think our president is know these things.
Zelensky.
Yeah, Zelensky.
He is a man of his word.
Yes.
Was it known that this guy is a fucking rock star before the war?
And you know, when he became president, it was people wanted to have changes. They wanted to have a normal politicians, normal people into the politics, and that's why they chose him. And he started his career as a president with very big energy. He almost changed one old laws once, one law a day for to get the bureaucracy away. He saw the importance to build up the infrastructures with the roads. Actually, we have, during 2 years, we got incredible good roads all over the Ukraine on the main roads. And of course, that money was taken more away from the army. If you have a Poroshenko was putting up the army very strong, but left this infrastructure. So, but we had a very good economic development before the war. We actually had a good middle class. Prices on real estates was going up. It was balanced, but all the time going up. So it was very good times. The economic growth was in a rate of 6-8% every year. And the deficit of the state budget was almost down to 1% only. It was incredible with a war going on in Donbass and Luhansk.
Do you think that this war would have been as successful if Poroshenko would have been the president?
No, it wouldn't. We wouldn't have this unity which we have now.
It's quite ironic when you look at Zelensky's history that he was in a TV show where he starred as a president.
Yes.
And then he became the president, and now he's a war hero.
Yeah.
He has no formal military education, right? He's a lawyer.
He's a lawyer, yes. So he's.
How much involved is he in the strategies, or does he give it to people that are better in those things?
I think he's very innovative. He thinks new different circles, and then he put his military to study the ideas. And he also listened to his generals. So actually he doesn't need to be the expert, but he needs to be the united, the one who unites everything. That is his work.
He he actually got more than 50% of the seats in the Ukrainian parliament in the elections 2019.
Yes.
That is unbelievably, unbelievable in a, so he has like more than 50% of the people's votes, which is very unusual.
Yes.
That someone, that a party in a democratic country gets that big.
Yes. But also need to notice that when the invasion started, the opposition came out loudly and said that now we put all the debates and all our fightings in on ice, and now we support the president. And this was something incredible. Everybody except the pro-Russians accepted it.
How is it possible that the Russians haven't managed to assassinate Zelensky yet?
Yeah, that is a... I really don't know. Either they are completely amateurs, or Zelensky has been lucky.
Because that's... that's kind of the first thing you do. You take out the morale by taking out their leader. Because, I mean, if the Russians have good intelligence, which they say that they have, they should be able to trace him and just kill him.
Yeah.
But obviously they haven't.
No, they haven't. And these death patrols on him in the beginning of the war, but he also had this, he moved every day. He didn't stay more than one day on one place, and it was random. It was no like schedule where he was going to go. It was always.
Have you met him?
No, I haven't met him. No.
Is he well protected?
Yes. Now he is. Now he is 100%. It's.
So, what do you think will happen after the war is over with Zelensky? Will he continue as president, because he said that he will only sit for 5 years? Do you think that'll change? Because I guess that he will get more than 80% of the votes or something like that. Crazy.
Let's see, because he's a man who keeps his word, and but it's also, you know, like what the people want. If the people says that they want him to stay, it is his duty to stay. So.
Because Zelensky is he's a real Mannerheim, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Hopefully he will not end as tragic as Mannerheim.
Yeah.
But he is the personification of a modern war hero.
Yes. Yes.
So let's talk about the fleet. The Ukrainians managed to sink Russia's most valuable ship, Moscow.
Yeah, but that is not so big surprise, because this Neptune missile is Ukrainian development, and it goes about 3 meters over the water. So it's coming under the radar. And they made also this really clever. When the missiles came closer, they had these drones up, which around approaching the Moscow ship. So the attention was, of course, on them. So it was a really simple trick what the Ukrainians made.
They must have been so happy that day.
you know, people was celebrating it 3 days here.
And the Russians, I read on your Facebook that the Russians were mad, so they sent a lot of missiles on Kiev.
Yeah, we really had the rain of missiles all over Ukraine during 3 days after. 3 days after.
How close have you been to the explosions?
700 meters.
So you felt the pressure wave?
Yes, yes.
How does war sound like?
You need to learn the different sounds. You need to learn what is the sound of a missile hitting a house. You need to learn the sounds on when the air protection starts and shooting. And you need to learn the sounds of your own artillery. And this is actually when you have the journalists in Kiev, and they were writing that explosions everywhere. Of course, they are not used. They can't say what kind of explosions they hear. So it always came in Aftonbladet, in Express, and that explosions all over Kiev.
Yeah, and it could be the anti-aircraft and the missile defense system, or
75% shown as it was anti-missile systems. Then, of course, they took out missiles up. You also have a special noise when you hit them in the air. But really, when you get a hit, you really hear the difference.
And how many percent of the missiles that they the Russians send, do Ukrainian anti-missile system take out?
They take out something about 60-65%.
And is it possible to calculate where it's about to hit?
This is like radar. Radar is calculating by itself.
So are there any apps or anything that can warn you if there's an approaching missile?
It's the radar system. Yes, it's the radar system. So it's.
So I mean,
they already know when they're coming, when they are shooting up them. So it's.
When they're passing. You know when you have to run into the basement.
Yes. Yes. You have about. When the sirens start, you have something about 10 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So you always know when there's an approaching missile in Kiev.
Yes, yes.
So you can basically be pretty safe if you're less than 10 minutes from a shelter.
Yeah.
Okay. And life is starting to get quite normal in Kiev, I've heard.
Yes, restaurants are open. All shops is open. People is working, factories are open, metro is working, public traffics are working, the block posts or the barricades start to be taken down, less and less control of people coming in.
And this is because people just get used to war.
But it's also you need to, even if it's war, but we don't have the Russians close here. So you need to keep the economy of the country also. There is a balance you need to go with the economic things and the war zones.
How much has the help and aid from around the world, how much impact has that been doing on the war? And
without that, the invasion would have succeeded.
And where is the biggest help?
Where is that? It's on the weapon side, and also the money help to keep the Ukrainian currency stable. That is the two things.
And is that like? Is it getting better? Like when people see that it works, like do they continue sending or has it stagnated in any way?
No, the money help which is coming, that is of course what the US is sending, European Union is sending for the state finances. The humanitarian help is of course also has been very important, especially on the western side of Ukraine. Where all the refugees was. So without that one, there have been very, very badly. Still needed.
Mm. In Swedish and Finnish media, we read about the Azov Battalion, which is Nazi armed forces, according to the media.
And this is really Azov was actually 2014. It was a right extreme group. 2015, it was already taken away the this policy from it because it was entered into the regular army of Ukraine. And today, Azov is actually like the U.S. Marines, and it's very simple to check out this data. Just to take the telephone and call the nearest Ukrainian embassy. So there are absolutely no right extremists fighting in this war. Absolutely no.
So they had this battalion, which was were there Nazis or were there extreme right?
Right extreme, real nationalists. 2014.
Were they anti-Semitic?
No, they were anti-Russian because when they, the separatists started, the Ukraine didn't have any good army to put up because that was pro-Russian, totally pro-Russian after Yanukovych time as president, because he actually took down the Ukrainian army. Highest officers were pro-Russians. So it was actually then this little group who took the lead to start to protect, and especially Mariupol was also taken by the separatists in the beginning, and it was this right extremist, which you can say, right nationalists who took liberated it. But when Poroshenko came, he actually denazified that battalion. Mm. And that because was already 2015.
If I go to the Swedish Wikipedia, it says that it's a right extremist, sometimes called Nazi, neo-Nazi. It's under the Ukraine National Guard. It still says that it's in the, I'm translating directly now, but it says that in the battalion there is ultra-nationalists, right extremists, and Nazis that are participating in the fights because of ideology.
No.
Often white power and anti-Semitic opinions.
No. You know, we have in the elections, these right extremists, they got 1.5% in the elections. How could you everybody think that that we would have a battalion consisting of neo-Nazis? They are not the good soldiers.
It says there is 900 to 1,000 people in the battalion.
No. There are 8,000, 9,000, 10,000. So this Wikipedia is you need to people fill it in there. This is the best thing is to take the journalist could actually take the call to the nearest embassy, and they will get a completely explanation what is the Azov. That is the elite of the elite today, and it's really really difficult to get into that battalion today. Mm. It's like to go into the U.S. Marine.
Mm. The Swedish public service, SVT Nyheter, says that it's an important part of the Russian propaganda. It's an effective way to paint your enemy as Nazis, they explain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Russian also tells that the government is a Nazi government here.
Mm. Yeah, even though Zelensky is Jewish.
Yes.
Seems like there's some kind of conflict of interest there.
Yeah.
Okay, so then the Russian war propaganda has been infiltrating the Swedish media.
Yeah, you know, you always have journalists who wants to have some sensation and just take a copy paste. You know, we had here from Ilta Sanomat, the Finnish newspaper, and two reporters, and we went through this with them, the Azov. And so they really understood that this is absolutely not a nationalist or not a neo-Nazi organization. So they made an article about it. But then 1 week later, when some other journalists was writing in Ilta Sanomat, they, oh, by the neo-Nazi battalion, 2 days after each other. So I made and sent an SMS to these two guys who was here and say, hey, look what is writing in your letter, your newspaper. And they answered, yeah, this is not right. So it's, I really don't know what the media is doing.
I guess it's kind of an overwhelming task to try to get a grip on this war, because the flood of information is so huge. It's extremely hard to know what to
Yeah, but this this information is also, if you take now Aftonbladet and Express, on the front, it doesn't happen every day. So much things, and then it happens. Then it can be a week with no happenings, and then 3-4 days it happens very much. But somehow the Scandinavian media needs to get the whole day program about what will happen. Then they take some military expert to come and give their view, and they don't have any information to go on. It's only speculations.
Yeah, it's like a like in ice hockey or football, when they talk about what's going to happen before the game, they have no idea. They only speculate.
Yeah, exactly. So my updates are, sometimes they are longer because it has happened something. Sometimes they are very short because it didn't happen so much that day.
Mm. So what will you do if you survive this war? Because we can't really, you're putting your life on the line every day, and people are dying in Ukraine. What will you do if you survive?
Now I'm already, I was here in Kiev when the Russians were, I'm now in Kharkiv, and our commandant said that my age is already so high that this is the last front area I can participate. They will not take me down to the south. So after Kharkiv is liberated, they will put me in the reserve. So I need to start to work with my traumas after this experience what I have had, and also start my civil work.
Mm.
And actually be in the reserve.
Mm. You will still actively work with the army, but you will not with weapon in hand.
Yes, and we don't take new recruits anymore also.
Because you feel that the war is so close to an end?
We really have people. More than what we need. Already has been in Kiev, this volunteer, two battalions already being put in the reserve. So they left their weapons into the weapon depot, and are only called back if it start to be really needed.
How many Ukrainian losses has it been?
I would say we lay something about in soldiers, something between 6,000 and 12,000. Then we have 30,000-40,000 civilians.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and 5 million refugees.
How many Russian soldiers?
I really think that what the Ukrainian gives, because what's happening is after a battle, there is a task group who need to try to find how many Russians can be identified, try to find documentations and so I would say we are about 25,000 Russian soldiers. That is realistic.
Do the Ukrainian army bury the Russians, or do you send the bodies to Russia?
No, what happens is it goes to the morgue, and then they try to identify them, try to find their mothers or fathers or wives. And actually, there are a group working with this. They're finding the telephone numbers and calling when they find information on the soldier.
So, is the Russian authorities helpful in any way in identifying
the? No. The Russians don't. Absolutely not. They don't want to hear about it even.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
That they are treating their soldiers that way, because even in death they don't try to honor the people that died for Mother Russia.
Exactly.
And how is the cleanup teams? Is it the same people that clean up the bodies and every day, or do they change? Or
no, it's changed. Of course, it's it's depending on the how the fights are going, but it's usually the volunteers groups who takes care about that.
And you only do it for a short period of time, and then you don't it again.
Yeah, and then you go. it goes in circles.
Because that must be one of the most traumatizing things to pick up. Deformed bodies and burnt bodies and dead children and things that is impossible to erase from your mind.
Yeah, it is. I can assure you it is.
Did you do it?
We were on one patrol count how many after in Irpin, in the town of Irpin.
How long have the...
It was after the 2-3 days.
So they already start to decay.
You know, they were all so burned. They were so burned. So it was nothing left. So it was nothing to rotten. It was totally fried.
Is it even possible to identify?
Only on document. If the documents... or some plastic cards has been in such a place that the heat didn't take it.
Hmm. Because I know that forensics can, like, if someone, you can take teeth and analyze them, but I guess that during a time of war, there's so many things going on simultaneously that you wouldn't spend that amount of time to identify the...
No, it's probably like this. They are put it on in boxes and deep freezed, of course. and if you had find some documentation and it has been shown, find their mother or father or son or daughter, it's then sent to them, this box.
And every body and every person that are identified will get a proper burial. It's not mass graves, right?
No, it's not mass graves.
And even with the Russians?
Not even for the Russians.
So the Russians, do they get a burial somewhere on a cemetery, or is it like...
And for the moment... the most important thing is to save them and to see after the war if can be sent back.
Mm. And what do the Russians do with the Ukrainian
bodies? They just leave them. Just leave them like they leave their own bodies there. They just leave them.
How do you think that the self-image of the Ukrainian nation will be after the war?
Now, I think it will be proud that we could defend this country, proud to be a Ukrainian, not to fight between each other among us and to stay united. I think it's really going to be a 20, 30 years of, like it was in Finland after the war, everybody was working for to get a good country again. And it will start. It will start also the same process here.
And how is the internal disciplination of Ukrainian soldiers who commits crimes?
Absolutely, I said, very, very low. There has been some videos from Kharkiv when they were shooting the Russian artillerist in the leg when they were taken. Of course, when you see what they made in Kharkiv, you can understand them to one part, but the officers and military police will not accept it. So if you do a crime by doing this, you are also punished for it.
Are there any death penalties for war crimes in the Ukrainian army?
Yes, it is.
With trial?
With trial, yes.
And how many of those have been performed?
Zero.
Okay. So the Ukrainian army knows that if they commit war crimes, they will be sentenced to death.
Yes.
And therefore they don't do it.
Mm. Yeah.
And of course you will say that. If we ask the Russians, they will say something else. But in general, I think
what's happening is that the prisoners, they are identified, they want likes to make statements, and also we change them against our own. So it's now and then we have this war prisoner changes.
How many war prisoners has the Ukrainian army taken?
Oh, I don't have any idea about it, but it's many because especially around Kiev, the Russian soldiers actually came walking and said they give up.
So because they were hungry.
They were very hungry, very hungry.
And how are the Russian war prisoners treated?
Not due to the Geneva Convention, but there is also many of these war prisoners who actually has taken service in the Ukrainian army.
Oh, deserters.
Yes.
And how do you decide to trust them, because they could be spies?
Yeah, they could, but I think our intelligence service is not so bad.
Not after this war, they could not be, because they have a lot of experience now. How well trained were they before the war?
Really good trained, because 2014 when it started, so they actually had experience of eight year of war before this invasion.
I don't understand how I always ruled out the alternative that Russia would do this full scale attack. I don't understand.
No, it's like me. I also said that it will not happen, because that will be the economic catastrophe for the Russians. They will have such a boycott on them that they will go back to 1910.
How do you think that the standard Russian citizen life has changed since the invasion?
it's taking, everything is taken away from them. They can't travel. Okay, they can go through Turkey and go have holidays in Turkey or in Egypt. But when Western European will find out that there are Russians on the hotel, they will be smoked out. So we're gonna have a very, very high Russian hate in the world after this.
And it's not their fault.
No, but No one, yes, because these people who has money for to travel, they can get information when they are abroad, right? And still 80% is supporting Putin.
That's because they are uninformed or misinformed, right?
Right, but you have a brain. We have a friend who is living in Russia and has a son of 12 years. And this son came home and told to his mother, I don't like the school. They are trying to put very big propaganda in our heads. I mean, a 12-year-old understand it and react out it.
Mm. I've heard stories of kids in Finland who freezes out Russian 6-7-year-old kids. They refuse to talk to Russian kids.
Yeah. This is the problem now which we're gonna have. Like we have here in Ukraine, that the hate against the Russian and everything what is Russian is very high. But still the Ukrainians make difference between Ukrainian Russian and Russian.
Hmm. For me, Russian hate is just, you know, the normal. And you were from Finland, so you would know all about it, right?
Yeah.
We inherit it with our mother's milk. So
Yes.
But for other people who doesn't already have it, because all nations have some old enemy that they don't like. Yeah. And for the Finnish people, it is the Russians, because the Russians did the same thing that they're doing to Ukraine now. They did in the 40s with Finland. And you know, before that, there's many years of the same thing. So
it's gonna take a long time before the Russians actually will be back on the level what they were before the war.
And hopefully, all the sanctions will make sure that they can't get there. And hopefully, someone will just. I don't think it's even possible to, you know, invade Russia. Nobody had ever done it before. And even if they would manage to invade Russia and put a new government there, they would probably just, you know, do another revolution as they have been doing before. But I hope that someone strong will just keep them down, making that they can't do it. Because the problem with a very, very, very big country and a lot of taxpayers and a lot of money and a lot of corruption is that eventually it'll go to your head. No leader has ever been able to keep their mind intact leading Russia.
Exactly.
Thank you very much, Kenneth, for participating in podcasten samtal. It's been an honor to talk to you, and I wish you all luck. Slava Ukraini, and thank you a lot, Kenneth.
Thank you.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.